You are listening to part two of our interview with Ayanna Nance, an addiction recovery advocate, on the Women's Mosaic on KXRW-FM. I'm Elizabeth Madrigal.
And I'm Karen Morrison.
And we're the hosts of the Women's Mosaic, where the real lives of women and girls are shared and celebrated.
In this space, we honor the feminine and amplify the voices of women speaking their truth.
The Women's Mosaic delves into the real lives of local women through story-rich interviews, learning what works and what doesn't to enhance the health and well-being of women in our community.
We strive to share unique perspectives, resource sharing, and instructions on how to be kind by any means necessary. Welcome to the Women's Mosaic.
She's just a girl and she's on fire, hotter than a fantasy, lonely like a highway.
Today we are joined by Ayanna Nance, an addiction recovery advocate. She shares her lived experience to educate, advocate, and bring hope to others. Welcome to the show, Ayanna.
Thank you. I'm happy to be here.
When an addict is confronted by the consequences of their substance abuse disorder, common reactions are denial, rationalization, and projection. Can this kind of defensiveness be short-circuited? And if so, how?
So, like, defensiveness is really just fear in disguise, right? That's just being scared. So I would say you can't force someone out of their denial. You can't make them see things for what they are until they're really ready. So I wouldn't say that there's anything in particularly you can do, but I definitely think that just creating that safe space, you know, letting them know whenever they are ready, like, hey, you can come to me, not rooting, you know, a conversation or leading with shameful, you know, words and energy. Like, I think that will create a safe space where they might be a little bit more likely to come around and face the truth. If you know, you frame a conversation or you make sure that you're letting them know, like, I support you, I'm here for you, I'm not forcing you into anything. You just gotta kind of leave it, it opens the door, and we'll leave it open a little bit easier.
So no demands, no, you know, shaming, no forcing people. Yeah, just giving them options and, you know, offering your openness and not judging. That's what I hear from what you just said.
Yep, definitely not judging. You know, you don't want to, you want to be able to go to somebody that's going to have an open mind and hear what you're saying, even if it's a load of poop at the time, you know. But you want, over time, you know, it will build up that rapport where it's just like, okay, now that I am struggling, this might be a safe person for me to go and talk to and let them know. They're not going to judge me. They didn't judge me then. So now that I'm coming to the realization I need help, they won't judge me now either.
Yeah. That's really hard to do too, to be the one who sees it and wants to offer help. And you just feel like you have to just wait. Until the person is ready, that you can't shove them into it. You can't force them into anything. I mean, I sort of look at it like, you know, opposition reflex when you're training a dog. If you try to drag a dog, it's going to have that opposition reflex. It's going to pull away from you.
Right.
And we're the same, you know, as human beings, we're the same. Anyone tells me what to do, my husband knows better.
Mine too.
Yeah. I also know better with him too, though.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. It goes both ways. Definitely goes both ways.
And there's no you have to or you should in our family. That doesn't happen. So many inaccurate and damaging stereotypes surrounding drug addiction proliferate, including the flawed notion that it only affects certain types of people. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of racism in that and, you know, whatever. But how does this impact recovery success or available resources, or does it?
Absolutely. Stereotypes around addiction are incredibly damaging, not just emotionally, but structurally. When people believe that addiction only affects certain types of people, it shapes everything. You know, who gets compassion, who gets judged, who gets the resources, who gets written off. And the truth is, addiction doesn't discriminate. You know, it touches every race, every income level, every neighborhood, every family, you know, mine included. The problem is that stigma, it makes people hide. You know, it keeps folks from asking for the help that they need, mm-hmm. because they don't want to be seen as quote unquote those people. You know, it also affects how systems respond. If society sees addiction as a moral failure instead of a health issue, then the solutions we build up are more punitive instead of being supportive. And stigma doesn't just hurt the person that's using, you know, it hurts the whole family. It silences people. It isolates people. It makes people feel like they have to just suffer in silence alone. And it's not true. So when we break those stereotypes, we make room for people to show up honestly and as they are, and they'll get help earlier and be treated with dignity instead of shame.
You know, I think, you talked about Al-Anon briefly, but I think that support for the family, you know, my father was very, very ashamed that my mother was an alcoholic. Mm-hmm. And he could not face that until they had been married 40 years. And then we were all gone by then. And he said, I thought it was you kids driving her crazy. And literally, he did. He thought we, you know, she didn't really want to have children. Maybe one was, you know, and ended up with five. And so he felt responsible for her, which is something that I think a lot of families do. So he had a lot of shame about making her have more children than she wanted. Mm-hmm. He had a lot of shame about her drinking, that he couldn't control her, which was, you know, his generation. But, you know, and then he said to me, well, you know, I just felt so bad for her when I realized she needed to drink. And so, you know, it just kind of got perpetuated and he died and she just, you know, she eventually did stop drinking. But, you know.
That's a win. That's a win.
It was a win, yeah.
I want to go back to the stereotypes because this is one that impacts a lot of people. If it's a black man on the corner shooting up, he's labeled as a crackhead. If he's a white physician in a hospital stealing his patient's medication and is caught, he's labeled as someone with a habit. Mm. And it's been amazing to see how we will use certain words for the same disease, but somehow give certain folks a pass. And this was a question that's always bothered me. When it's certain races, it's deemed as unsolvable, untreatable, there's no hope. Other races, on the other hand, were like, we can put you through this very lovely resort. Mm-hmm. We can put you through the Betty Ford Clinic, we can put you through this. When it's someone of color, incarceration is their first defense against this. And it's so wrong in every way. And this is still taking place today. And mm-hmm. it is something that I'm glad that we can now call that out what it is.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And the one thing about incarceration is that now there's starting to be a lot more resources available in, mm-hmm. when you're incarcerated. Mm-hmm. But before there weren't. You know, you would have to detox. You would mm-hmm. have to kind of go through those things. They now have like NA. They have different support programs in there. So it's getting better.
Yes.
It's getting better. But I think that they're slowly but surely coming around to the idea that you can't put someone in jail. Like it keeps them clean. You know, it doesn't.
That's
I'm not even going to tell you that lie, because there are people that, you know, they have more access to mm-hmm. substances in incarceration.
In jail.
Than on the streets. So it might come at a greater cost, but it's, you know, it's definitely still there. But at least being able to offer those tools and some type of support for folks that are, you know, in there and they want to change. Because once they leave those doors and there's no accountability, mm-hmm. there's not a correctional officer overseeing you and making sure that you're doing the right thing. Like all of what you learned and all that sobriety that you gained in jail, it goes out the window, you know, and it's hard to maintain sobriety, especially with having a record. Now you've just come
yes.
out of jail and now you don't have access to a lot of the resources. There are certain requirements where you might not mm-hmm. be able to get into treatment if you have a felony or certain kind of felonies. So it's not like there's an open door waiting for them. So the best thing that people can do, if you're going to put people in jail that are suffering from addiction, like please give them the tools that they need to
right.
be successful when they come home.
Yeah, those reentry programs are very, very important.
Very.
And because housing is impacted by your record.
Yep.
So some functional types of addicts display no outward signs of substance abuse and may even maintain their professional and personal commitments. Is it any less difficult for these people to seek treatment? And if not, why not?
Oh, this is a good one. So high functioning addiction is actually, it's very tricky, because what you're seeing is somebody that's okay. you're seeing someone that is well put together because mm-hmm. they can pay their bills, because they wake up and go to work on time, because they're, you know, they're not on the streets, they're not in jeopardy of losing their home at the time. But the dangerous part about that is that, you know, at the end of the day, they need help. And then once you start to live in the circle of like, okay, I'm keeping up a facade, it's like, nobody knows that you need the help that you need. And so you really end up putting yourself in a horrible situation trying to maintain this mm-hmm. persona that you're okay. And so it's definitely, I would say, more dangerous for someone that is functioning, you know, because addiction doesn't care how many responsibilities you're juggling. You know, addiction doesn't, it doesn't discriminate on, you know, somebody that's pretending to have their stuff together. So it's just important that we always make sure that folks know that they can enter into recovery at any point. Because once you are, you know, maintaining this idea that you're perfect and that you're okay just because you're upright, you know, it seems mm-hmm. like such a failure when you do have to kind of let the curtain fall and show that you have been struggling. And that's what you need to do to get help. You have to be able to accept where you are and how you've been living. And so that's usually what holds people back from getting the help that they need, is mm-hmm. because they have to show the world, you know, that, hey, I might not have been struggling publicly, but I've been going through something privately. And now I got to let the world know so I can get the help I need. It makes it really difficult.
Mm-hmm. Well, and you don't have the family support or the employer support when, well, why do you need to do that? You're fine. You're fine. Right. And they'll try to reassure you that you're fine because they don't want their life to be disrupted.
Right.
Or the workplace to be disrupted.
Yeah.
And, you know, I mean, to me, that was one of the problems with my mother's lack of ability to recover, is that she could still, mm-hmm. From an outside perspective, she was such a great actress, she could, you know, she could hold it together front of an authority figure mm-hmm. or, you know, a neighbor. And, you know, there was the family support. Well, we don't want to bring that shame into the family that we have this problem. Mm-hmm. So we're going to support her in that fake.
In silence.
Yeah, mm-hmm. and in silence.
You're listening to the Women's Mosaic on KXRW. We've been talking to Ayanna Nance about her addiction recovery advocacy. We're going to take a quick break to hear from our sponsors and then continue our conversation.
Support for KXRW comes from On Point Community Credit Union. With 8 branches in Southwest Washington, offering checking, credit cards, home equity lines of credit, and more. On Point. People are the point. Federally insured by NCUA. Equal housing opportunity. Learn more at onpointcu.com.
KXRW is supported by founding partners Morrell Inc. Print and Marketing. Since 1993, Morrell Inc. has offered high-quality, creative, and innovative solutions from their women-owned, union-staffed, state-of-the-art print shop. Morrell Inc.'s experienced staff uses the latest technology to solve clients' marketing needs and within their budget. Find Morrell Inc. at morrellinc.com. That's MORELINK.com.
Thanks for staying with us. You're listening to the Women's Mosaic on KXRW. Today, our guest is Ayanna Nance, and our conversation with her continues. So what do you wish you had known about substance abuse disorder before your recovery, and what would you like others to know?
I would say one of the main things that I wish I would have known was that, you know, recovery is more about, it's not as much about perfection as it is about perseverance mm-hmm. and progress. Mm-hmm. I wish I would have known that shame didn't last forever. That would have prevented a few wrong turns that I took. And I also wish that I knew I didn't have to do it alone, you know, that the guilt and shame kept me in a closet and it kept me from reaching out, you know, and there are a lot of resources and services if, you know, if you're willing to reach for them and you know how to navigate the system.
Mm-hmm. That's pretty powerful. I think an isolation, you know, the inability to talk about the problem because of the shame and because you don't want to disappoint people. That's the other thing. You mm-hmm. know, you don't want to see the look on their face when you say, you know, I have this problem and I need help. You don't want them to worry, you know. And so a lot of it is based in compassion for the people who do support you and that you do love, you know. And We don't have that much compassion for ourselves, though.
Right.
I think it depends what it is. If I was to come and say I'm a type 2 diabetic, you'd be careful that I didn't eat certain things.
Right.
You would be really careful. Oh, no, watch out for that. It has honey in it. But when someone comes and says, I'm an alcoholic or I'm a drug addict, it's almost like, well, surely this little bit won't hurt you. Mm-hmm. Yes, it will.
Absolutely.
It may kill you. Yep. And I think so many people try to just justify it for you. But when somebody comes and says, you know, I'm an alcoholic, I make sure that I'm protecting everything around them.
Yes.
And about them, and not pouring myself a drink.
Right, right.
And not taking care of them, thinking they can work that out on their own. Yeah. So I think it's very important that we respect someone's disease, and that's exactly what it is, a disease, and we protect them against anything that could hurt or harm them.
Absolutely.
Could you give us some examples of supportive and empowering language to use with someone working towards recovery?
Empowering language, I would say, is like positively affirming, you know, mm-hmm. a person, mm-hmm. letting them know that you're proud of them and the progress that they've made. Let them know, you know, just remind them that this is not the end of your story. This is, you know, a little bump in the road, but it's not the end of the road for you. You still have life to live and things to strive for. So just kind of reminding them that, you know, I believe in you and you're not mm-hmm. your mistakes. Basically talk to them like they're human, you know, because that's exactly what they are. But I will say, honestly, with me, there are times where nobody can tell me that they're proud of me. I push away all of those positively affirming, you know, sayings and comments, because there's a certain point in my personal life, in my recovery, where it was hard for me to wrap my mind around somebody being proud of me for doing something that I felt was wrong, mm-hmm. for hurting people that I loved, mm-hmm. for doing things that were illegal. Somebody, that's something that I felt like I should have been doing. So for somebody to tell me that they're proud of me for changing my life to do something that, you know, I shouldn't have never done in the first place, it's hard to hear that. So I would also recommend that if you are going to be trying to empower somebody with, you know, positive affirmations or just kind of letting them know you're proud of them, don't take it personally when they don't receive it. Mm-hmm. It often, they probably won't receive it because they are fighting demons within themselves that right. doesn't allow it. And so you just have to kind of keep fighting. You got to keep trying and keep pouring love into them, because that's what they really need. They might not be able to say it or express mm-hmm. it, but there is an internal fight still to this day that I have within me. And I feel like I can't be proud of my accomplishments, because I feel like the fight, my struggle to get where I am, I should have never had it. It shouldn't have been that way. So I definitely just want to throw that out there, because I don't want anybody to give up on someone because they feel like, you know, oh, they're not receiving it, so I'm not going to keep trying.
They don't respond.
Yeah, keep showing up. You know, keep showing up when they're ready to hear it and to receive it. Or they might even receive it and just not outwardly, you know, mm-hmm. express it. So just keep pouring into them. Don't stop.
You are absolutely great, by the way.
She is.
I mean, I have to say, you're just reaching people. I mean, you're reaching me. I know you're reaching everybody else here.
I appreciate it.
And it's good. Making me feel happy and sad at the same time, because I know there's so much suffering. Mm-hmm. And so I just wanted to tell you that. I couldn't help it. I was like, she doesn't know how mm-hmm. important this mm-hmm. is.
How empowering.
And how empowering it is, mm-hmm. and how meaningful. There's going to be someone who's going to listen to this episode.
It's going to save a life.
And, you know, it's going to mm-hmm. really matter. So thank you.
I really hope so. Like, one of the things that I used to say, like, early on in my recovery, is that I didn't know there was so much power in other people's pain. And mm-hmm. I learned that by going mm-hmm. to, you know, different meetings and different groups. And I would hear people talk about, like, what their journey has been and what their struggles were. And it was something that I could have never fathomed, I think, in my own personal life. But to see them standing there and they're smiling and they're mm-hmm. joking and they have overcome, you know, right. their struggles, like, it's very empowering. So there is a lot of power in other people's pain. And so I try to share my story, hopefully, so somebody can grow from mine the way I did.
Absolutely. And I think when you're in the midst of it, you feel so alone. Yeah. You feel like you're the only one who's ever had to deal with it. And, you know, it's like any other disease, like, you know, having a cancer diagnosis. Yeah. You feel like you're the only one mm-hmm. in the world who has cancer. And you know, the thing is that people do survive these things.
Absolutely.
But it isn't always easy.
No.
It's not, you know, it's not a cushy ride, but, you know, there is a ride.
So my story is unique, not to most people in recovery, but for me, I think my situation is a little different amongst my family. My outward, you know, statement that, hey, I'm using was when I was arrested. And so I kind of didn't have a choice to share that information. And of course, like going through treatment, they kind of force you to live in those moments. And it's a big part of healing. But I still care about, I think that's why I kind of shut myself off and didn't want to share it with anyone. I didn't want to disappoint my brothers. I didn't want to disappoint my family. I was, you know, the baby, the only girl. I was, you know, straight A student. I was the one that they were pulling for because of what they had gone through. So I think that was both a blessing and a curse to be able to really have to think about what it was going to do, you know, to my family. I was just glad that my mom wasn't here to see it. But then there are times where, you know, I think that she could help me. So it's definitely something that stays in the forefront of my mind, especially with my husband. You know, my husband's family, well, my family. I don't like differentiating between, you know, in-laws. They're my family. But yeah, it's definitely something that still kind of keeps me in my recovery, I'll have to say. Like, wondering how it will make them feel if I were to go backwards. They say you cannot enter into recovery for someone else. You know, you can't do it for your kids. And growing up with a mother that was an addict, like that, I was striving to get straight A's. I was trying to do this. I was trying to excel in so much because I was trying to get her attention. And I was fighting against a substance that I wasn't going to win, you know. And so, like, being able to understand that, I can share that with my family so that they don't feel the same way. But it is definitely empowering for me to have them and know that I'm not going to let them down. It motivates me to stay straight. But, you know, you cannot enter into recovery for anyone else. So you have to be able to stand on your own. But yeah, it's definitely something that shapes my day to day. You know, it keeps me in my active recovery for sure.
So are there any misconceptions people have about addiction, recovery, or advocacy that you would like to correct?
Absolutely. There's two that come to my mind. One of the biggest misconceptions is that it's a failure. Addiction's a failure. It's a moral failure. It's not. It's a combination of biology. It's a combination of, you know, environment, coping skills, you know, how you were raised. It's a combination of all of that. The second one would be that recovery is a straight line, that there's just one system that can, one size fits all. It's not. My journey was the swirly, squiggly lines, spirals, circles. It was everything but a straight line. And I had to realize that that's okay. And I think everybody should like be able to say that's okay, that my recovery journey is not a straight line. You know, as long as you get where you're going and you're able to recover and heal, like that's all that's important.
So before we go, is there anything we haven't asked you that you would like to share?
Yeah, I really just want people to know that recovery is real, that healing is real, that it is possible to get the help that you need. I want people to know that there are people like me. There's a lot of people like me that are fighting for the changes that will, you know, keep more people from falling through the cracks. I want people to know that there are resources. You know, it's okay to ask. It's okay to inquire about things. There's a lot of resources on the internet that you can learn about, especially in Clark County. That's where I live. I wish I could share more resources in Washington or throughout the states, but definitely don't be afraid to reach out and say that, you know, you are in need of help. And the storm, it won't last forever. You know, and my shirt says you are stronger than the storm. And I strongly believe that. Another thing, everybody in any type of, anybody actually, create a soundtrack to your life. Like, yes. Music has played such a huge role in my entire existence. I come from a family of singers and musicians, and I do music as well. And so I realized that when I was on my recovery journey, like the soundtrack of my life, it actually motivates me when, you know, when I'm at a point where words can't reach me. You know, I can put on my headphones and go into a zone where I'm like, okay, all right. All right, I'm better. All right, I'm cool. I made it. But I think, you know, people don't sleep on the power of a good playlist. You know, I get some songs that motivate you. Get songs that uplift you. I have a cold playlist that goes from like Patti LaBelle to like Bob Seger. You know, Queen. So definitely recommend, you know, if you are having a bad day or you just need to take some alone time, but you need a little bit of motivation, get you a playlist going. Yeah, you know, if anybody's looking to join the fight for recovery, you know, in advocacy, I strongly recommend checking out Washington Recovery Alliance. They are doing some great work throughout the state of Washington. And they actually gave me my start in advocacy, so very grateful for them. And yeah, I'm here. I'm going to be, you know, someone that is going to pledge my support to folks that want to get help. I'm available without judgment as someone who's been there. So I have no problem sharing my email. You need a sober buddy. It's not fair for anyone to have to do any of this alone. Mm-hmm. So it's not fair for any of us to do it alone. So I'd like to share that resource as well.
Okay. So can you give us your email?
I will. Yeah. It is Ayanna Nance 82. So AyannaNance 82 at gmail.com.
Okay, so we didn't know if you wanted to share your email, but we're
Throw it out there.
Really?
No phone number.
Throw it out there.
No phone number, but yeah, email's great.
Thanks so much for being here, Ayanna, and for sharing your experience, knowledge, and wisdom with us.
Thank you for having me. I really appreciate the platform.
Well, I think a lot of people are going to appreciate how much you've help their awareness and to encourage them to rethink the, you know, the unconscious and conscious biases that people have. You know, we all need help.
Yes, absolutely.
Yes. We all face many different challenges in life. And so there shouldn't be any blame when you want to reach out. So one final question. How is it possible for people to reach out anonymously? You know, maybe they're not quite ready. Is it, you know, are their names or telephone numbers confidential when they contact somebody? Or, you know, is that something to worry about, or is that just a minor thing?
I mean, depending on where you're at in your recovery, you know, I believe that there may be like the crisis line, 988, that you should be able to reach out to and anonymously, you know, get some help over the phone. But I definitely believe you would have to disclose your identity in some capacity to get benefit from the resources. So I don't know much about, you know, the different resources that are out there as far as anonymous ones. I do think that there are always opportunities to go to a meeting. If any meetings, those are all anonymous, Narcotics Anonymous.
Like a 12-step meeting?
Yeah. And you don't have to be working the 12 steps necessarily, attend those meetings. I have gone in different stages. So definitely that is a place where you don't have to worry about your identity, and you can be open and honest and really share your story and walk out the door and hopefully feel, you know, uplifted and fulfilled and stronger.
For more information about addiction recovery and treatment referral services, you can also call the free SAMHSA's, and that's SAMHSA, National Helpline at 1-800-662-4357.
That concludes the second part of our interview with Ayanna Nance, an addiction recovery advocate. If you'd like to hear part one of this interview, visit kxrw.fm and click on the Women's Mosaic show page, where you'll find the streaming link.
And that's our show. New episodes broadcast on the second and fourth Tuesdays, but you can stream any episode online anytime.
We are so grateful to our guests for sharing their knowledge and life experiences with us in their support of the health and well-being of women and girls.
So until next time, be kind by any means necessary.
And remember to honor your power.